You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. About 20,000 California wildfires. That's the number CAL FIRE has recorded in the state from 1878 to 2017. The U.S. Geological Survey helped with data from 2018. And all of this means that you can find a color-coded data map of where these fires have and haven't happened in the state. The map is at capradio.org. It's quite stunning to take a look at it. I want to give credit to Emily Zentner and Chris Hagen for that work. What would you do? Where would you go if a wildfire was coming toward your home or burning toward your neighborhood? Those are the kinds of urgent questions now that are taking on an even more difficult tone for people who live in high-risk fire areas. CAP Radio producer Sally Schilling has been listening to these concerns and fears, attending community meetings, and she's here to share some of her reporting. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Beth.
Let me stay on that map for a moment. Thousands of fires over hundreds of years, but what's been happening recently with the mega fires? Is that changing the awareness and the sense of danger for people?
Yeah, I think in some ways it is, and in some ways it's not. I mean, a lot of the Sierra Foothill areas, for example, when I visited communities near Lake Oroville or Placerville or Nevada City Grass Valley, they're keenly aware of the fire history in their areas and over time, you know, have known, you know, going back decades, they'll still talk about specific fires that happened that destroyed hundreds of homes. But these fires are making people think differently now. We're seeing, you know, 87 deaths in the Camp Fire. We're seeing images and videos of people getting stuck in traffic and desperately trying to get out. Mass evacuations that no one, even the emergency planners, could have, they say, could have anticipated in some cases. And that's kind of shaken people all over the state that live in fire-prone areas.
So is it fair to say that they're talking about their vulnerabilities now differently?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And one of the things, there's so many different pieces to looking at the fire preparedness puzzle. But one of them that I kept hearing over and over again at these meetings that have been called in the wake of the car and the campfires is, how are we going to get out? Are we going to get stuck in traffic somewhere on these narrow roads that we have to get out to maybe a 2 or 4 lane highway that, you know, merges it back down to 2 lanes? Is everyone going to get backed up somewhere? Are we even going to know where we are? And I went to Nevada County, actually, to this community near Grass Valley called Alta Sierra. It's about 7,000 people that live in that area. And this is just one example of a foothill community where it's a pretty dense development right in the middle of the forest and the foothills, high elevation. You're going up and down. And one person described Alta Sierra as, if you look at the maps of the roads there, it looks like spilled spaghetti. So I took a ride around that neighborhood with a retired firefighter, Chris Riley. And here's a little bit of us driving around and him talking about his concerns.
I just see the problem of too many cars hitting the road and you have one accident, or somebody's got a trailer and they get stuck and it jams up.
So, yeah, there we were driving around and I was starting to get car sick. We even kind of got lost at one point, you know, and he lives in that area. But it just goes to show this idea of getting out is something that a lot of people are kind of, you know, after seeing these recent very fast moving fires, thinking about everyone trying to get out at once. How is that going to look?
That is a steep canyon area. And that's another factor of the terrain. You are saying up and down hills, and anybody that's driven there and can get car sick knows exactly what you're talking about. But the canyons where the winds can whip and move the fires so fast before anybody can get in there and really deal with them is another factor there. Where are people with that idea that we only have one road out?
They're really worried, and they're out talking to their neighbors more about other, you know, private roads, or maybe there is another gravel road somewhere. And it's these just person-to-person conversations that we're seeing now that maybe there is another way or another alternative. Hey, if we did get stuck in traffic, maybe there's somewhere we could go, like we even saw in the campfire, people trying to shelter in place at a store or somewhere they could find. And I talked to another resident who's been super concerned recently in the Nevada County area, Scott Allen, and he took me around his area. And he, when we were driving past, it's so beautiful out there, the canyons, we were looking out, and there's big grassy pastures. Mm. And we stopped to talk to a rancher named Jim Gates. And you'll hear in their conversation here, first off, that they're both very aware of the fire danger that they live with as kind of longtime residents in the area. And then Scott also asked if maybe the pastures could be a place where if they had to, people could just run to if they got stuck in traffic. So here's a little bit of their conversation.
This fall, Nevada County was as dry as I've seen it in my 68 years, okay? And you go out there any night, you want to go out there, that's Deacon Hill, right on the other side of that Starvation Bar on the South Yuba. Any night, 6, 8, 10 campfires out there.
Wow.
By people that never even heard the word responsibility, let alone know what it really means.
Right. When we had a fire a couple years ago, you said, hey, use my field. I've got that irrigated pasture field.
Yeah.
And so what I'm concerned about is if we could even have a sign that so people know that this is an area they could shelter in place, because right now you can't outrun a fire.
What choice do we have?
Hmm. So that's interesting, though, some proactive action on the part of landowners, homeowners, neighbors, residents, and that can be a whole additional network of safety or at least communication.
Yeah, and there's actually these community groups all over the state that have been in place in some places for a long time, but we're seeing more and more of them being formed now called fire safe councils. And these are really on the neighborhood level, but can kind of coordinate together. And in Nevada County, that has one of the highest numbers of these local fire safe councils of any county in the state. And the kinds of things they can do is hold meetings about, you know, just discussing basic preparedness, evacuation concerns, applying for grants. There's a lot of cap and trade money that can go to doing big fuel breaks or, oh, this is our one way in, one way out, but it's really overgrown. You know, we want to cut that back. We want to get people organized. Oh, we live in a gated community. Let's make sure someone has a key to that extra gate, that way out that we could take. So there's more people interested in forming these fire safe councils or joining their fire safe councils. But you know, these grassroots efforts are really hard to keep going over time. But I've found that, you know, in the wake of this past fall, there are people that are trying to ramp up these kinds of efforts. I went to a meeting near Placerville. There's a community called Pleasant Valley where a woman named Chris Avery is trying to restart the fire safe council in her area in the wake of the campfire. And here she kind of talks about what her area is like and, you know, why their fire safe council a few years ago was kind of moving in action and then why it kind of disbanded.
We are a very high fire danger area. We're rural. We're outside of the city limits of Placerville. And we're right below the Jenkinson Sly Park Lake area. So we've got some flatlands. We've got lots of foothill, mountainous roads, curves, lots of one way in, one way out type of situations.
What was the goal of the meeting tonight?
To get all hands on deck and reform this council so we can get to the work that needs to get done.
And why now?
Now's a good time because fire is on everyone's minds. When a big fire event happens, people get scared. When there's no fire, people don't think about it. It's not on their minds. They don't want to participate. Now they want to participate, so we've got to strike it while it's hot.
So yeah, there was a fire safe council here before. Can you talk about what happened with that?
Yeah, there was a fire safe council. We actually were pretty active for a couple of years, and we had a couple of big fires in 2014, and everybody was really interested. And about 2 years later, interest really dropped off. Even though we were having really successful public outreach meetings, giving people lots of information about evacuation and preparedness, they weren't interested in actually being part of the council and assisting us to do the work that needed to get done to get some of these projects done.
That is Chris Avery talking with CAP Radio producer Sally Schilling. And as they describe these fire safe councils, it reminds me of the grassroots efforts to take back the night or create neighborhood watch. And sometimes they're as strong as the people involved are. So now it sounds like this group really has a motivated leader in Chris.
Yeah, and I think you can even just hear in the background of that meeting that there's a lot of people there.
Did that surprise you that these meetings had hundreds of people attending?
Yeah, I think the reason I started to do this reporting was going to a meeting up in Nevada County in early December, a fire safety town hall, and I didn't know really what to expect. It was in the big county building, and I got there, and it was, you know, a weeknight, and the whole parking lot was packed. People, as I was walking in, were walking back out of the building. I'm going to go home and listen on the radio. And I was thinking, you know, why aren't they just, you know, they just got here. But I opened the door to the building and the whole lobby and overflow was just packed, let alone the meeting room. Every staff there took every meeting conference room and filled it with people. So I was taken aback by how many people were motivated to come out and kind of like talk about these concerns.
This is not a one-size-fits-all solution either. Even though there may be one road in and out of a town and one town can share their plan with another town, there are so many unique factors for each area.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in being inspired by the campfire to do these things, I was kind of thinking, well, can we really say that the campfire could happen in one of these other places? And like you're saying, there's unique factors to every area in terms of the terrain, the fuel. The winds were a huge factor, obviously, in the campfire. And also a key factor is fire history. If you, again, going back to the fire history map, if you go look at the area of Paradise, you can, and with the map that our digital data dream team put together, you can just see all the overlay of all these different fire perimeters over the years, and it's just, you know, fire after fire over
time.
That's
why the color coding gives you a sense of where the state has longer history. And it's interesting to see the swath up the middle of the state where there have been no fires. But back to your point about Paradise, there's a lot of history there. And then Nevada City,
there's no fire perimeters right on that area. And so I was talking to CAL FIRE Chief Brian Estes, who is chief for Yuba, Placer, and Nevada counties, about that. And he says, you know, that is a big factor. You know, we're not seeing that pattern there. And that is something as firefighters we do take into consideration. So maybe it's not as prone as somewhere like Paradise, but it does still have the terrain and the fuel, and that fuel hasn't burned in a long time, so that's still a concern for him. So it was interesting to talk to him, asking him, is this an anomaly or not, what we saw in the camp and the car fires? And he actually grew up in Paradise. He said, you know, he was surprised by what happened there, that it was sort of this perfect storm of factors. But then again, every year over the past 5-7 years, he's seen another anomaly event, something that surprises him in the fire service that he thought would only happen one time in his career. So it's kind of complicated there. And he says the big factor in why there's so many more anomalies in his mind is the drought.
I think he had a family member, didn't he, just barely escape the Paradise fire?
So what's interesting is there's a couple different emergency personnel in Nevada County that have really close ties to Paradise.
To Paradise,
that grew up in
Paradise. Butte County. Yeah.
Yeah. So another emergency official, the Office of Emergency Services Director John Golsarian for Nevada County, actually used to be the director for Butte County and grew up in Paradise.
Ah.
And I talked to him as well. So it was very interesting to get perspectives on Nevada County from people that know Paradise very, very well. And for John Golsarian, his daughter actually was still living in Paradise. And he actually told us the story of when he was at work in Nevada County that morning when the campfire broke out.
I was in a meeting, you know, monitoring the fire, just as all emergency managers do or fire departments do. And it just was getting bigger and bigger. And then I was, when it was hitting the Feather River Hospital compound campus, I knew that it was a little bit bigger event than we were going to be expecting. My daughter was staying at our house there. She goes to Chico State. And so I was trying to get a hold of her. And a few minutes later, I tried back. And basically, she was in our driveway trying to get out, but it was pitch black outside, smoke. And she could see flames in the distance. And the phone cut off then. And that was pretty much time for me to go run to Paradise. And even though I knew I was not going to be able to go into Paradise and do any help, but I was going to do everything I could to help my daughter in any way that I could. And then fortunately, she did get out, but it was several hours later. There was fire all around her, trees falling down around her. We met on the side of the road, Highway 99, where she'd ran out of gas. And basically, I picked her up off the ground because she was done, emotionally wiped out from the ordeal that she just went through. And we put gas in her car and hugged, and I went back to work because we were under red flag alert here in Nevada County, and you want to be close by if there's a fire starting in your county.
So, you know, a personal note for someone who was also working emergency operations. So he definitely had a connection to what happened up there, but also, you know, is seeing this heightened response even in Nevada County from people wanting to hear stories like that and be proactive.
The stories are hard to hear sometimes. The emotion is so intense, but they will continue on as reminders and anecdotes, family history, community history about what happened. I know some areas are running drills right now to help their citizens be able to respond or formulate a plan. What else? What else is there for people to know? Can anyone start one of these fire safe councils?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of fire safe councils, you can find them. They have Facebook groups, or you can contact your county office of emergency services and they can help you find information to either start your own or connect you to someone with one of these organizations. And then again, there's just neighbor talking to neighbor too. Chris Riley, who was driving around the spilled spaghetti roads, has been talking about doing a color-coded evacuation route system where, oh, you know, we're up here at our house. You could take the yellow route out and you wouldn't receive the information electronically because this reception's so shoddy up there. Mm-hmm. But on your street sign, there would be a little reflective symbol of like, this is the pink way, the pink route out. Uh-huh. And like you just heard in that story, people are caught in the dark and they don't know which way to go. They don't have cell phone reception. So that resident, Chris Riley, is working actually with John Golsarian, the emergency services director, on that system. Grassroots efforts on all fronts.
Well, Sally, thank you. I know this is just one aspect of a very large discussion, and we have this little window of time right now while the weather is wet and cold and the fire season is basically diminished, although I'm not going to ever say that it ends. So let's continue the sharing of the work that you're doing and what you're hearing and bringing it to us, because I think everybody benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
And back to that color-coded map, too, which is at capradio.org. You are hearing from Cap Radio producer Sally Schilling. Again, Sally, thanks a lot for your work.
Thank you.
This is Insight on Cap Radio.